Good morning, Dr. O'Neill. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine, Molly. Thanks for asking.
Good. We're going to be talking about the student loans webinar we held in September on the Cole-Meary Act or the Forever GI Bill. And so there are some significant changes to education benefits. Which of these benefits will make the biggest financial impact on military families?
Well, I think I want to start out first by just saying that the webinar was very detailed. We had two parts. It was kind of like we were talking about student loans and college on the front end, you know, preparing to go to school and different benefits. And then we were also talking a little bit about the back end and paying off student loans. So it was very detailed. Today, we're only going to be scratching the surface, and I would just encourage anybody who's listening to go to the Learn page for the webinar and pull off those slides because there'll be a lot more detail. Okay, so having said that, the answer to your question about significant changes in the Forever GI Bill, first of all, people should know that it's pretty recent. That these changes were signed on August 16th of 2017. And probably the most important thing is the fact that if people meet certain qualifications, there's no time limit on the use of their benefits, you know, when they would take them. So, you know, that's pretty huge for people. And some people, like myself included, I went back for an advanced degree when I was in my early 40s. So you could have a service member who maybe isn't interested in education when they're younger, in their 20s and 30s. Maybe life intervenes, they have a family or something, and then they decide to do their education later. So it did remove what was previously a 15-year time limit, but the key date is that certain events had to apply to someone on or after January 1st of 2013. So they would have had to leave active duty and have a discharge that was from a period of at least 90 days, that they were a child or a spouse who became eligible for a scholarship, and then a spouse who received a transfer of entitlement. So again, if those three things happened, one of those three things, on or after January 1st, 2013, people would not have that time limit to get their benefits used. Two other things that happened that they talked about on the webinar was that people can get their benefits restored if they were affected by a school closure or a programmatic disapproval. So, you know, you have some education programs that just don't pass muster. And then finally, they talked about the fact that new tools are coming online to help people find out if the schools that they might be interested in have priority enrollment for veterans, which, of course, would be very attractive for people. I know here at Rutgers, we have a very good reputation of being a very veteran-friendly university. So people might be looking for that in their educational institution. So those are some of the big changes.
Great. So can you talk a bit about how military spouses can benefit from the Forever GI Bill?
Yeah, well, that's important to note that it's not just for the service member, him or herself, but there are also benefits that could apply to their spouse. And that's kind of important, too, for people to remember. So when I was looking at the webinar, I came across this acronym DEA, which is Survivors and Dependents Educational Assistance. So what they talked about on the webinar was that there would be an increase in the amount of educational assistance that would be payable under DEA. But they also talked about the fact that the time period for eligibility was actually decreasing from 45 months to 36 months. So I guess this speaks to the need for much more proactive planning by the military spouses than maybe the service members themselves, in the sense that the spouses have a time frame that they need to complete their education by, and it's a lot more open-ended for the service members, assuming they pass those qualifications that I talked about and that magic date. Other things that could affect the family members, the spouses, is that there were some changes in the monthly housing allowance. So obviously, if you're living the military life with your service member spouse, those allowances are going to affect the spouse as well, the non-military spouse. So that's something interesting. And the other thing that they presented in the webinar is the definition of the word campus, you know, as to the campus where you're receiving your education. And it's actually a pretty broad definition, because it could be the physical location where the student is learning if they're in a study abroad program. It could be internships, externships, practicums, that could be in any place that's off campus. So it's pretty broad definition as well. So those are some things for the spouses.
So it sounds like the benefits have been expanded quite a bit. Are National Guard and Reserve members eligible for these benefits as well?
Yeah, well, there's an expansion there. You're absolutely correct. So what they presented in the webinar is that the VA will consider the time that a National Guard or Reserve member spent called to service on or after June 30th, 2008, as active duty. So it's interesting with all of these provisions that are added to the regulations surrounding the GI Bill and educational benefits. They all have these really key dates. So for the National Guard and Reserve, it's June 30th, 2008. So if you are called to service as active duty, this service can count toward the establishment of your benefits in the post 9/11 GI Bill. And they also clarified too that this includes authorized service for major disasters. So it's not just a war zone. I mean, we've had all these natural disasters in the country, and I'm sure there's lots of National Guard and Reserve people that are helping the folks down in Florida right now in the aftermath of the hurricane. So it includes that, as well as obviously pre-planned missions and in support of combatants. So basically you would be, you know, active duty in a war zone. So quite a bit of service might be able to count toward those benefits.
Okay. So the other half of the webinar focused on student loans and loan repayment options. Who qualifies for the alternative repayment plan, such as income-based repayment?
Yeah, well, like I said, this is a very interesting webinar, because we had a lot of acronyms going in both parts. You know, we had a lot of military acronyms going in the first part, and then, of course, all these student loan repayment acronyms in the second part. So what I would recommend to people, if you're really interested in that, to get the slides. They have some really good bullet points on them that talk about all the different repayment plans. So basically what Carrie Johnson talked about, because she was the presenter, is that people are automatically put into the standard 10-year repayment plan, unless, of course, they come along later and select otherwise with, you know, one of any number of plans. And she presented six plans that just had to do with income driven, you know, kind of structure. And then there were three traditional payment plans, and then were some others as well. So who qualifies? Well, it depends. I mean, some people will qualify by income. So she listed six different income-driven repayment plans. For example, pay-as-you-earn repayment plan and revised pay-as-you-earn repayment plan. So income can be key. Another would be the type of job that a student loan borrower has once they leave college. We talked on the webinar about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. And then even a person's health and earning ability could come into play. There are some plans that are kind of income sensitive. So again, if people have a limited ability to earn an income, they might qualify as well. So basically it's, you know, by your income, by your earning ability, and by the type of job that you have.
Okay. There was a bit about loan consolidation. When might that be a good idea?
Well, just like any type of loan consolidation, because people can do this for credit cards as well, if they have a lot of different credit card bills outstanding, it could be a good idea when you have lots of loans. It certainly will simplify your payments and your record keeping. You know, you think about somebody who goes to college, and let's just say they're on the four-year plan, although I know a lot of students who sometimes go the 5 or 6 year plan. You know, you're talking about 4 years and fall and spring semester at least, and some people go in the summer as well. Every time you take out a loan, you're going to have quite a constellation of loans. So you might simply want to do that for the simplification. Instead of having to make 8 or 10 payments, you basically have one, and you've got simplified record keeping because you're only dealing with one loan versus multiple loans. The other way that you might want to consider this, in addition to the simplification aspect, is if the new loan rate is less than the previous loan rates, you know, because the whole benefit there would be to lower your payments and, you know, get some economic benefit. So basically the two reasons are lower payments and simplification of the process. And as far as some additional information that Carrie presented about loan consolidation, she told the audience that they should go to studentloans.gov to start the application process if they want to consolidate. She mentioned that even private types of loans, private loans, not the ones that come through the federal government, can be consolidated in some cases. But she did caution people to not consolidate both private and federal direct loans into a new consolidation loan, because then once you commingle, you have lost all the benefits that a federal direct loan might provide. You know, there are more benefits as far as repayment flexibility and death discharge and that sort of thing that you might not get in a private loan consolidation. So just warning people about that as well.
Okay, great. This is a great look back at our webinar on student loans and Forever GI Bill. And like Dr. O'Neill said, you can find the slides and other resources at the link that will be posted with this podcast. Thank you so much, Dr. O'Neill.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks.